We will call the meeting to order. This is State Government Finance for Friday, April 29th, 2011. And we still need a couple of folks for a quorum, but we will get started because we have a full agenda. And I want to call forward, we'll start the process of presenting House File 1579. And we will not be able to move it until we have a quorum, but Representative McFarland, welcome. You may proceed with presentation of House File 1579.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for allowing us to come forward with this. House File 1579 is the Minnesota Accountable Government Innovation and Collaboration Act, also known as the MAGIC Act. It's very powerful, I will tell you. I'm so excited about it. This bill creates a framework within which government will harness the creative potential of state and county professionals by encouraging them to create new business models that enhance the provisions of government services in Minnesota in ways that can be tested, measured, and replicated. And just a little bit of background of how we got here today. Last year, there was a redesign caucus established. Representatives Marquardt, Loeffler, Erdahl, and myself were involved in that. And over the interim, we had some RFPs that were requested, put out to the public, to both public, private, nonprofit, and individuals. And we received an enormous amount of responses over the interim. And so this year we've been meeting, trying to meet as often as we can to bring in some of those ideas. We have such a huge list that we can't get through them this year. But this is one of those that came forward. The counties came and gave their presentation on redesign, and they were inspired, and I was inspired by also the work of Tony Murphy, who I believe has come to your committee and presented his ideas. They brought their ideas to the joint conference that they held with the cities and the school boards, and the enthusiasm has been growing and the energy. And so I'm not one for just sitting and talking about things. We need to get some action to this. So Representative Marquardt and I and Joe Matthews, Tim Walsh from Scott County, yep, and Deb Dyson and Mark Shepard from our staff, we sat down one day and we went through and we created this bill. And we're very excited about it. I really especially want to thank the counties and all the work the association has done. And with that, we do have an amendment, but I guess we can't move it right now. How would you like to proceed with more detail of the entire bill after amended, or?
Well, we can't move the amendment now, and we should have a quorum here very shortly. Okay. So,
okay.
Why don't we just hold off and give your basic presentation, and then
okay.
We'll.
With me today, I have Joe Matthews from the Association of Minnesota Counties and Nate Burkett from Todd County that can give the on-the-ground appeal to this. The bill contains three articles, the first one being counties authorized to act on matters of county concern. The second is the MAGIC Act and the pilot program. And the Article 3 is the North Star Council, which is also the same as House File 1599, which is for planning. And with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Matthews.
Welcome, Mr. Matthews. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Joe Matthews, the Association of Minnesota Counties. I want to thank you again for having us here. And as Representative McFarland said, this is really something that grew out of the presentation in this committee that Tony Murphy had given earlier this session. I think it was our assessment that we thought that this would be a year of opportunity with the fiscal crisis and everything else. There's a lot of willingness, I think, to look at new ideas. Both sides of the aisle have been involved. Representative Marquardt and others have been very helpful. And also, I think the administration's been much more willing to look at doing a different model of services. And so with that in mind, we believed at the county level, along the lines that Tony Murphy explained, that our strength in the system would be the ability to help innovate on the process side. The state's role really is one to set the objectives, the outcomes, the performance measures that we need to abide by to make sure that we're all pushing in the same direction. If Tim Walsh was here, he'd say, you know, the county's job is to row and the state's job is to steer. And so this bill really pushes us in that direction. I'm going to speak to the first article, then I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Burkett to talk about Article 2. And then we can all talk about Article 3 when we get to that. But the first article really is, for us, a significant change in that we're really making counties more than just an administrative arm of the state. We're really turning them into an all-purpose local government, a real local government, if you will. And for those of you that are not familiar with the history, in the 1800s, there was a court case that created what we know as the Dillon Rule, which basically said that counties could only perform actions that were explicitly authorized by the state. So any time that we wanted to do something new or innovative, we'd have to come to the legislature and get permission to try it out. What this section does, and there will be, when we get to the amendment, there's going to be a small change to clarify some things here, but what this amendment does is it says, to the extent that the state or federal government or the cities or townships within the county have not spoken to an issue, the county would be authorized to act. And I'll give you a great example. Tony Murphy had set up in Beltrami County, there's actually currently a program called Students First, where the schools, the community, and the county have partnered to try and boost graduation rates among students in their community by pairing them with mentors. They've got funding from a foundation. It's just underway, so we'll see what the results are. But his point was, if that is a successful pilot, if it is demonstrated that that's something that works, the county's not currently authorized to fund that going forward. And we feel that this article actually allows our counties to invest dollars in areas and collaborate with other local governments to a higher degree than we're currently allowed under law. And we think that over time that's going to drive down costs for everyone by encouraging that collaboration and also empowering the local folks to make decisions in a way that they think will really benefit their community. And so on that piece, it's short, it's fairly simple, but for us it actually is a fairly significant step forward, we believe, in empowering local governments to really act in the best interest of their communities. And again, I guess I just want to emphasize before Nate begins, it does not allow us to preempt or interfere or act inconsistently with any state or federal laws that may be out there already.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Nate Burkett. I am the County Administrator of Todd County, Minnesota. Thank you again for the opportunity to present here today. The county and state relationship is a lot like a parent and child relationship, with the state being the parent and the counties being the child. And the way that we talk about this a lot of the times is, if you're, and I'm presuming most of you are parents, and you have a choice between two parenting styles, one being a parenting style where your child can only do exactly what you tell them to do, and another being a parenting style where you give a broad set of parameters and you say, make sure that you behave within these guidances and you'll probably be okay, which one are you going to choose? Most of you would probably say that you're going to choose the parenting style that allows your child the flexibility to develop their own personality and to develop the skills and abilities that are important to them and that are their natural strengths. Right now, the parenting style that the state has with counties is the kind of parenting style which is totally prescriptive. You tell us exactly what must be done, and if it is not completely within inside those parameters, we're not allowed to do it. That does two different things on the county level in our assessment. Number one, it stifles all potential creativity and good ideas that we may have. And number two, it probably costs the state more money. Because if you think about that parenting style where you are prescribing everything, you also have to keep that child under your thumb at all times. It takes a lot more resources to keep that child under control. So in the keeping with that kind of metaphor, parent and child relationship, I'd like to tell a story about my son, who's 18 months old. And around Christmas time, he was 12 months old, and we had bought him one of those little boxes that you buy for children that have shapes that you're supposed to put through the top. And the top comes off, and then you pull the shapes out, and they're supposed to do it again. Well, after he got done playing with the wrapping paper in the box that that box came in, he decided that we finally got him to start playing with the shapes and the box the way that it was supposed to be done. But he realized relatively quickly that what we were really, he kept on taking the top off the box and just putting the shapes in. We kept on trying and trying all we could to get him to put the shape through the top of the box, but he'd just take the top off and he'd drop the shape in. And after a while, it struck us that what we were doing was, what he had done was he had learned what we were trying to get, what we were trying to accomplish. He realized that we wanted the shape in the box, and he had found a better way to do it. So what happens here, and to bring that back to the county-state relationship, is that counties are now really, really good at putting that shape through the box. We know every in and out of every audit mechanism that you have at every level of state government. But that doesn't really tell us what we're trying to do. It's kind of like when you put that shape in the box and then you don't bother looking inside of it to find out what happened when that shape hit the bottom. Because the truth of the matter is, I don't think that there are very many counties out there right now, not because we don't want to, but because we haven't really had the authority to do so before or otherwise, that can say reasonably that we know what happens when that shape hits the bottom of the box. And I think that we all can agree that as it relates to county service provision, what we're really trying to do is positively affect our environment, our communities. It's the state's goal, that's the county's goal, but we can't actually say whether or not we are doing that. So the method in Article 2 that we're proposing is a careful, strategic methodology for counties to begin to change from being nothing more than a service delivery provider, and sometimes I like to call us just simply an audit fulfiller, to, as Joe said, a full-service local government organization that is able to use our natural skills and creativity to increase the possibilities of achieving positive outcomes statewide. We want to partner with the state in that. We don't want to just be out there on our own, and I think there are certain things that are explicitly off limits, but I think that this gives a good, solid pathway that gives everybody reasonable input to making this state a better place to live at a lower cost.
And Mr. Chair, if I could, I'd be happy to describe what that process is in some detail if you'd like.
Go ahead, Mr. Matthews. Thank you, Mr. Burkett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Essentially, what we've set up is a framework by which counties can develop pilot projects. The current system we have is if a county wants to try a pilot program, we come to the legislature with special legislation to do that. What we are trying to do is speed up the cycle time that it takes to really have an idea and actually get it into practice on the ground to do a small pilot in order to provide the legislature with some real data and some real practical experience as to whether or not different models of service delivery are going to provide meaningful results. The way we do that is we first start out by requiring the county board to basically pass a resolution as we start all things at the county level to direct the staff to engage with the state agencies to begin the process. They develop a business plan that they send to the state agencies for review, and in collaboration with the state agencies, we actually develop outcomes and performance measures to make sure that we can measure our progress towards those outcomes with the state agencies. It's really a collaborative process where the state works with us to really add clarity, as Nate said, not just to put the shapes in the box, to actually figure out what the point of putting the shape in the box is in the first place, to figure out what that outcome should be. Once we get that phase worked out and once the agencies have signed off on the outcomes and the performance measures, we actually then turn back to the business plan where the counties will lay out in detail how they actually expect to meet those performance measures and how they expect to meet those outcomes, and specifically what existing rules or statutes might be a barrier to doing that along the path that they've laid out. The commissioners of those agencies are empowered to provide waivers then on a temporary basis from 12 to 36 months to allow that pilot program to continue. As we go through this, there's ample opportunity for the state agencies to comment and provide feedback to the counties, and in fact, we expect to have an ongoing dialogue between the state and local governments throughout this process to make sure the pilots are proceeding as expected, and we do give the state authority to terminate the pilot in the event that the county is not in compliance with the business plan they laid out. Each year, we're also requiring counties to provide a report to the state as far as which programs, which pilots are in place, and how they're proceeding along their performance measures. That's going to be compiled and presented to the legislature each year in January. Our hope is that there would be interest at the legislature to monitor those pilots, to hear how they're progressing, to find out what the impacts are. And then, of course, at the end of the pilot program, we'll be asking if it was successful that you would maybe make it a permanent change. Or if it's not successful, we actually think we can learn from that, and we want to use the legislature as a collaborative way to discuss how we can create a learning environment and how we can actually maybe take what didn't work so well and apply that the next time to try and find ways to improve it. We're not using this as a way to make a structural change that would be permanent. I think that's a really important piece here. This is a way to allow counties to try things out on a limited basis with state input to make sure that if there are some things we can do on the process side, let's try and explore those without throwing the baby out with the bathwater. And so in a nutshell, I think that's what we do here, and I'd be happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Matthews and Mr. Burkett.
Oh, yeah.
We have achieved a quorum. We've got a number of other committees that are going on here, and so we will officially open the meeting. Representative Murphy.
I had a question, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Of Mr. Matthews.
Yes, proceed.
Thank you. This yearly report, is that the report card?
Mr. Chair, Representative, no, there's in Article 2, there's a specific report that the counties are required to provide to the state that is essentially a summary of what pilot is in place and what's happening within that pilot project. The report card is, I believe, in Article 3 that you're referring to, and we haven't discussed Article 3 yet at this point.
Okay.
So I'm going to officially move House File 1579. And Representative McFarland, you have an amendment that you would like to be added to the bill to get it in the shape that you would prefer?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I have an A3 amendment.
A3 amendment. I will move the A3 amendment.
And I'd like, Mr. Chair, to have Mr. Matthews address those issues.
Okay, Mr. Matthews, would you explain the A3 amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A3 amendment really is a reflection of a number of suggestions that we received going through the process with other folks that had an interest. The first section, Section 1, I guess it's all Section 1, but under the first section, which is the general welfare clause that goes through lines 1.5 through 1.18, this is really language, or sorry, 1.16. This is language that actually was brought to our attention by the NRA, the National Rifle Association. They had concerns that the previous language might give counties the authority to preempt state or federal gun regulation and be more restrictive. That was not our intent. Again, our intent of the bill is to act only in consistency with state and federal law. So this is language they suggested to just restructure that slightly, and then there's also a specific cross-reference to 471.633. We're supportive of it. We think it's an improvement and just adds clarity to what we were already trying to accomplish. Lines 1.17 through 1.27 is actually language that was suggested to us by NAMI and other folks who did raise a valid point that there are folks that receive these services that should also have input in the process. And so these lines actually add multiple points of contact where the folks that the advocacy groups or others that might have an interest in the on the side of the recipients of the services would have an opportunity to participate and comment. And again, our intent is to collaborate with everybody. It's not to leave anybody out of the discussion. And then finally, if you turn the page over, this last, lines 2.2 through 2.22 is language that we developed working with AFSCME Council 5 and 65 to make sure that we're not somehow, again, creating a process by which we might undermine the rights of our employees. And again, this is something that we feel is an improvement to the bill and really helps us, again, stay focused on our mission without putting up barriers to what we're trying to accomplish on the county side. And then finally, lines 2.23 through 2.24, this is actually... it was brought to our attention. Representative Banyan has a bill that would focus in on zero-based budgeting, and we didn't want to be in conflict with what he's trying to accomplish. And so this language ensures that to the extent that Article 3 references the budget process for the state, that would work in concert with what he's doing in House File 2 as opposed to potentially in conflict. Thank you.
And Mr. Chair?
Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And also to that point, it's also included in the state finance omnibus bill, I understand.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've just got some questions. It could be for all three. One of the three can answer if they like.
Representative Benson, is this to the amendment?
To the amendment, yes.
Okay, thank you.
To the amendment. In Section 4, I had a lot of experience with downsizing in my previous life. Implement new equipment in a postal facility to automate a mail stream, and in doing so, in terms of contract negotiations and the like, we would be forced to then find positions for, and it's very seniority based and so on. And quite often we find ourselves really mismatched with talent, skills, and abilities, or knowledge, skills, and abilities, and having to make difficult choices. Just very quickly, somebody who had processed mail on a machine and not had to talk to just about anybody for 25 years, but because of seniority and their rights to make sure that they got the bid, the tour that they wanted, suddenly they're on a window, you know, serving customers. And it just a total mismatch. And it just didn't work. My concern with Section 4 is just simply, you know, this is trying to give you folks some opportunity here to find some new, real new efficiencies. I'm really concerned that the language that I see with all the musts include really ties your hands. I would have some difficulty actually including the amendment with so many musts I could see are encouraged to. But unless you've managed under a highly unionized where seniority and counts, you can really find yourselves in really tough situations with trying to place employees that really don't belong in the new job.
Mr. Matthew?
Mr. Chair, Representative Benson, actually, thank you for raising that point. I think that as we discussed this with Ask Me Council 5 and 65, we shared some of those concerns. The only thing that I'll say to this point, we don't anticipate the pilot projects being a massive structural overhaul. When, for those of you that were not here last biennium, we enacted something known as the Service Delivery Authority, which was another mechanism for counties to utilize joint powers to do some very serious structural reforms. We see the MAGIC Act as really a way to do process reforms, and so there are other avenues by which we could go through a labor restructuring in current law that we could use as an alternate to this statute. So I think your point is very well taken, and I think that's something we'll continue to look at as we go forward and make sure that we're not going to hamstring ourselves, because that was something that we did discuss. But again, we believe that the reform and the changes under this act are really going to be process driven, and again, they're a pilot project, so it's only something that's going to extend for 12 to 36 months. At the end of that pilot, if the determination is made that the new system is going to require fewer people, that's a decision that'll be made under existing statute as opposed to under this framework, I believe.
Mr. Representative Benson.
Well, then, if it's meant to be temporary, why is it included in here? I know there's some comfort. This is comfort language. But I don't understand why. I mean, this would tie your hands. So if you found some process changes that could lead to some real efficiencies, you've got to jump through all the hoops that you've placed in this bill. And I'm wondering I'd be more than happy to make an oral amendment to say we just drop Section 4 from your bill.
Mr. Chair, if I could.
Mr. Matthews.
Again, you know, the amendment, I think, is a reflection of a number of discussions with a number of folks. We did meet with the governor's office on this bill as well. They did not give us an indication for or against, but one of the concerns that has been out there around the entire concept of redesign has been, you know, what is the effect going to be on everybody, on management, on employees, on the recipients of the services. Again, I don't feel that we ignore that your concern. I think that that's something that we wrestled with a lot internally. But again, we don't see counties actually taking an action that's probably going to actually trigger this section through the pilot process. So to some extent, it is comfort language. And I guess we feel if this will make it more palatable for the governor, we would be willing to accept that with one caveat. As again, we have not gotten a direct response from the governor, but we'd be happy to work with you as this heads towards the floor. If this is something that isn't going to ease his mind, then I guess we're going to have to revisit it. And of course, we don't want to give the store away, but we also want to be cognizant of the fact that we want to allay concerns that may or may not be really what our intent of the bill is.
Representative Benson.
I'm very sensitive to your need to do that. However, unless there's something in this section that says that this trigger goes off after the pilot, so it's renegotiated, I can't support it.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, actually, if Representative Benson is amenable, we'd be happy to include that. And I think that in our discussions with labor, my understanding is that their intent was to really constrain this language only to the pilot project. And we'd be happy to try and find language to fix that before this is brought up for a vote on the floor or in the next committee, whatever the route is. We'd be happy to do that.
Representative Benson?
I would appreciate being consoled in that, and I'd I'd like to see some language drafted before it made it to the floor then.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Members, I think we would have an opportunity to do that because here, while it's still in committee, we're still waiting for a fiscal note, correct, Ms. Roberts? And so because we don't yet have a fiscal note, we can't finally act on this. All we're going to do today is to hear it, to lay it over. You would have an opportunity to amend this amendment along the lines of the discussion we just had, so that when it comes back before us next week, hopefully, that we would then have this provision taken care of.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Mr.
Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Perkett has an example of on the ground on this, if you'd like to hear it.
Well, I was, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Perkett.
Thank you. Representative Benson, I was just in listening to the previous conversation, especially as it pertains to these pilot projects, and I understand the language is just going to be aimed at those. In Todd County, that we've reduced our staffing in the past 2 years from 210 employees to about 170 as we speak. So that's due to, you know, our spending reductions, board decisions, things like that. We can't really stand to lose any other staff, and we're already actively in the process of making sure that when we have to make, we can't really do layoffs because we're already at pretty much our minimum capacity. So we're already actively pretty much implementing these things, and I think a lot of other counties are in the same position. So I don't find myself too concerned about it. I know some of my colleagues are a little bit worried, but overall, just to kind of smooth over your concern again, I think as it pertains to the MAGIC Act, this will be okay.
Representative Benson?
Well, I could have let it lay until you said, well, I have many concerns. I have a lot of concerns. I spent 30 years negotiating and maintaining contracts, and I know once you get something in the contract or get it in law, unless you got something else to give away, you don't get it out. So I have some real concerns, and I really need for you to talk with me about it so that we can get the language in there to guarantee it. Okay, thank you.
We're still on the amendment. Representative Banyan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative McFarland, and to the other testifiers for including mention of zero-based budgeting. I really appreciate that. One of the things that I would want to talk about here is two parts of House File 2 that you may want to consider if we're going to be drafting another amendment at some point while this bill's in the committee. The first one being, House File 2 includes a lot of discussion of principles by which one does planning in terms of forming a budget. And there's references in House File 2 to some of the strategic goals that you're now realigning, in essence, through this state strategic plan. I'm wondering if we just left it as it is, how and were both our bills to be passed and signed into law, how would we reconcile? How would someone reconcile those two pieces together? Maybe the intent here is just to have a placeholder to say we'll work it out. And the question is, shouldn't we work it out now, or should we somehow, you know, have some reference back? Because I see no references to the pieces of the of planning and sort of our goals that are here. And I particularly note within the bill itself, but again tying to this point about connecting to House File 2, that you have reference on page 7. I think it is on page 7. No, I take that back. On page 6, right at the very bottom, 632 through 634, with reference to the milestones and the compass and that experience, when we were drafting House File 2, we looked at those documents in terms of trying to figure out how to connect planning to budget as well. And of course, one of the frustrations is the milestones and the compass are both still there, but are sort of used not very strictly. How did I put that nicely enough? I think so. I'm wondering if maybe we shouldn't look for something that sort of says how they work together a little more than what I've got here, because I'm not sure if they both passed. How someone trying to interpret the statutes would make that work for themselves.
Mr. Matthews, Representative McFarland.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Mannion. We haven't discussed Article 3 in detail yet. We haven't gotten there. But I think our intent as we drafted this, we really believe as counties that if we're to really act to the maximum efficiency for the citizens, we need to have some sort of state strategic plan that we feed into. In relation to your question about the budgeting principles, this was our stab at trying to lay out a framework where we thought we could get some guidance for what we do on the local level. I think that we'd be happy to work with you to try and figure out if we need to tweak some language to make sure it works in partnership. But the budgeting principles that the legislature would follow, or that the agencies might follow, should again work in concert with what we're doing here, where we're really saying there should be a strategic plan that you follow as well. Maybe there's principles within that plan, but we'd be happy to look at that a little more closely.
Representative Banyan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One more question. I promise this one's shorter. The House File 2 also has a sunset commission within it, and has provision that all newly formed councils would have a sunset date attached to them. Would you be amenable to having an amendment to having a sunset date on the North Star Council?
Mr. Matthews.
Mr. Chair, two thoughts on that. No, we wouldn't be opposed if that was the will of the legislature. Our thought with the North Star Council was, strategic planning isn't really something you do once and then it's finished. And so we would say that as the legislature deliberates that, and again, it's not our place to as counties to tell you how you ought to do your strategic planning, but my suggestion would be you consider some sort of recurring and revisiting of the strategic plan as times change. And how you do that, I think, is really up to you, but I just leave you with that thought.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative McFarland, given the discussion we've just had about possible changes in this amendment, I'm wondering if it would be best to withdraw the amendment for now, to work on it, and when we come back to this, to bring a revised amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That would be fine with me. I'm wondering if you would like the Jim Matthews to continue with Article 3 in the bill itself.
Yes, but let's. Yeah. If that's okay with you, what I will do is withdraw the A3 amendment, okay. and then, given the discussion we've had here today, come back with a revised amendment that addresses the concerns. I was going to raise a concern also about 2.23 and 2.24. I think it's unusual to see language like that in a bill, and to Representative Banyan's point, it seems to me we need some clarification here on how this might get worked out. And so I will withdraw the amendment for now, and we'll expect a revised amendment then when this is back before us. So with that, you may proceed in explaining Article 3.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Article 3 is already discussed as the North Star Council, and this is something that has been a passion of Representative Marquardt for quite some time. I think there's a lot of other folks in the legislature that have looked at this. Representative Banyan has obviously been doing very similar work as well. And the way we put this together is we really just look back over the last few decades at what we've seen, what we thought worked well, what we thought maybe could have been improved upon. And so what you have before you in Article 3 is really our interpretation of a framework that might work to do state strategic planning. What we really lay out effectively is if you see in Section 2 on line 5.17, is the North Star Council. And it's basically headed up by an executive committee. But if you turn to page 6 at the top, you can see, it starts at the bottom of page 5. But we include private business, organized labor, nonprofits, foundations, counties, cities, towns, schools, and it goes on. The principle here is we really think that in order to have an effective strategic planning system, you want to have everybody at the table. You really want to try and be inclusive. And again, this stems out of the philosophy that I think in the discussion we've had amongst counties, that the clearer the state vision is, the easier it is for us as local governments to kind of tailor our activities to feed in and support that. I think the idea, again, going back to the rowing analogy, we need to know where we're rowing if we're going to get there effectively so we can coordinate our efforts. Within this, you can see that we suggested there be I believe, 10 policy goals with up to 100, so basically 10 outcome-based strategic performance measures for each one. And again, that's just something we put out there. But built into this, as you go through the remainder of the section, you can see that we also include some ability for the private sector to potentially engage, to collaborate, so the agencies, if there's an interest, can collaborate with volunteerism, nonprofit, and business sectors to help them develop their strategic plan. Some of our counties have had success working with groups like Public Strategies Group. Others have used University of Minnesota Extension to do their strategic planning, and we just thought that that was something that may be of interest to various functions of the state as they go forward as well. And then finally, you know, without getting into too much detail, you know, we really believe it's important if you're going to have a strategic plan that somehow you find a way to really ingrain that into the budgeting process. And I think that you heard a lot of discussion about that on House File 2 the other day, and I think Representative Bannion, I won't belabor that, I think he's facilitated that discussion already. But we do believe that it is important if you have a strategic plan that you then bring that into the budgeting process. And I know Representative Murphy, oh, she's not here now, but I know she had a question on the public report card on state performance. One of the things that our counties have done, some of our counties, they have implemented a performance management system of some type. In Beltrami County, it's called Strategy Aligned Management. In Olmsted County, I think it's called Managing for Results. Amy's nodding yes, so that must be correct. But the idea is that once you establish these performance measures, you have to be honest with yourself, and you have to put that information out there. And just by sometimes collecting that data and putting it out there for public consumption, you can really help give yourself some direction, some motivation, and we think ultimately improve performance. And so that's part of this as well. And that's a fairly simple explanation, but I think with some discussions pending with Representative Bannion, we can talk more about this article in depth when we come back as well, if needed. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Anything else, Representative McFarland, in presenting the bill?
I think we can open it up to questions, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Questions from the committee? Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman and Representative McFarland, how does this differ from the multiple such councils, plans, strategic planning, like DRIVE and whatever? I can't even remember. There was one that we still referred to that was done by Governor Wendell Anderson, I believe. I can't remember its name.
Representative McFarland.
Thank you. Joe Matthews will answer that question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kahn, great question. You know, in a way, this is very similar to a lot of things that have done before. We borrowed very heavily. This was just something that we felt was kind of picking the best pieces of each one and putting it together as a framework that could be used going forward. I think the real test, ultimately, of any of these is there has to be a willingness at both the legislative and the agency level to embrace it. And again, that's something that we can't mandate or stipulate, but we just, again, this was our suggestion that we thought it was worth looking at, and I know the CPA Society and some other folks have talked about this issue, and you know, I mean, we certainly think there's a lot of room for the legislature to weigh in and make this their own as well.
Representative Kahn.
One of those reports, again, they kind of blend together, I can't remember which one, did recommend the abolition of the Lieutenant Governor's office. Are we going to see things like that appearing in this plan, or can we put it as an amendment on this bill now?
Mr. Chair, if I could.
Mr. Matthews.
I think one thing that's very different about this, and as I mentioned to response to a question from Representative Bannion earlier, this is the idea behind this is to have a group that actually does strategic planning, not looking at just restructuring, but more of a vision for the state. And I think that as we've had discussions within the Association of Minnesota Counties, every once in a while an example comes up where there might be one thing happening in one agency and one thing happening in another, and to some extent they're kind of in conflict with one another. Or there might be two different, you might, as a budget decision, cut the funding for one program, but yet it's a high priority for an agency or something else. And so the idea really is to do more vision work, I think, through the strategic plan, and not so much look at specific suggestions, but more some general guidance about these are the outcomes that we want, and then allow the legislature as kind of the oversight body to really figure out how we get there.
Yeah. Representative Kahn.
Well, I guess the real advantage of that approach is that if you don't put any specific lines out, then nobody can say that it wasn't done. Just a comment.
Representative Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And first, Representative Kahn, we like the Lieutenant Governor.
Yeah, I do too. I've
I
done
don't
this
want
for,
to eliminate
I've
her.
Done this for Lieutenant Governor. I have a consistent, Mr. Chairman, sorry.
I know.
I have a consistent record of having done this for Lieutenant Governors, I think, over the past 10 or 20 years.
And I'd
years.
Agree with you, but I like this one.
Well, it wouldn't affect
Representative Gauthier has
a question. I have a question. Representative Benson expressed some of his concerns, so I'd like to just express some of mine. And I'll be honest, I haven't read this line by line, but I intend to. And I just want to make it very clear that if there's anything in this bill that reduces workforces or doesn't honor collective bargaining agreements, you're going to have a problem. And I just want to make that very, very clear. I don't mind doing innovative things, but we need to respect the processes that we have in place. And then the other comment I just want to make is there was a statement about just delivery of services. Well, that's the role of the county as created by the state. So I want to be real clear about that, and we need to meet those mandates. So those are my concerns, and I just want to convey those to you, and I'm sure they're shared by people on this side of the aisle.
And Mr. Chair, if I could, to those specific concerns, no, there is nothing in the bill that would interfere with employees' rights or current agreements, and that's something that also, on the flip side, coin of Representative Benson is also something we're not trying to go there in this bill. We really have no interest in messing with that particular setup, and I think that our stance at AMC has been pretty consistent. The current system's been serving us pretty well, and so you're not seeing anything like that coming from us. On your second point, you know, I think that again, our intent behind this, with innovation and everything else, is not to change what the state is asking us to do. We're asking for an opportunity to try some different ways of how we do it, and so I think that I just want to add that as comfort and as clarity, so that folks understand that we're really just talking about the processes by how we get there. Thank you.
Further discussion from the committee? Seeing no further questions, is there anyone in the audience who wishes to be heard either for or against this bill? Anyone who wishes to be heard? If not, Representative McFarland, Mr. Matthews, Mr. Burkett, thank you very much for bringing this forward. You may know that our committee spent a considerable amount of time earlier in the session hearing from Beltrami County and others with regard to the need for giving more flexibility and opportunity for counties to reform and go about business perhaps in a different way than we have in the past. And so we're very pleased that you brought to us an idea, set of ideas that may be able to help us move in that direction. So thank you for that. And with that, I will lay this bill over and expect that you will come back to us with a revised amendment. And so we'll lay it over for today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Okay, do his first. Okay, we will now move to House File 1332, Representative Hansen. Representative Hansen, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And I will move House File 1332.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just want to acknowledge a group of high school students from southwestern Minnesota that I ran into in the hallway. Their members aren't here today, so they're here and are watching their Future Leaders program that is here to watch the committee. So,
well, hearty welcome to all of you. This is the State Government Finance Committee of the Minnesota House, and we're pleased to have you with us today. Hope you have a good day. Representative Hansen. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And House File 1332, I believe, is in the Omnibus State Government Finance Bill.
Yes, it is, Mr. Representative Hansen.
This is a housekeeping bill from the legislative auditor, and I have Mr. Nobles here. It is looking at a couple of functions with the auditor. One is providing for a private auditor that could do some work with the state fair. And then the second is allowing for carry forward, just updating the statutory language, so carry forward relating to some of the legacy funds for the next biennium. So Mr. Nobles is here to answer any questions you may have.
Welcome, Mr. Nobles.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim Nobles, legislative auditor. And first, I want to thank you for having this language in your omnibus bill. We did discuss it some weeks ago. And if you'd like, I can just quickly remind the members of the committee why we have this before you and what it would accomplish.
Please, thank you.
Members, we initiated these two provisions to try and relieve us, first, of a mandate. It's quite consistent with the discussion you just had about counties, giving the Office of the Legislative Auditor a little more flexibility to more strategically use our resources. And so Section 1 would relieve us of a mandate to do an annual financial statement audit at the state fair. Actually, it's an audit that we enjoy and we've done for a long time. Kind of looking behind the scenes of the state fair is a very interesting audit. And so we give it up with some reluctance. But it does consume a significant amount of hours. And we think it is work that could be done adequately by a CPA firm. We would retain the jurisdiction to go back over and do a more focused examination if there were a need to. But frankly, over the years, the State Fair has been, we think, a well-run organization. But if the occasion were to arise, I just want you to know that as a semi-state nonprofit organization, we would retain that jurisdiction. The second section of the bill would allow us, as Representative Hansen said, to more flexibly use the carry forward that we have, and specifically we want the authority to use those resources to do audits of legacy funds. We are currently auditing three funds that were enacted under the legacy amendment. We think that is really at the core of what we need to do in terms of ensuring accountability for those very important funds that the people of this state authorized to be utilized. And we did not receive any additional funding to do that work. And we are not here to ask for additional funding. We're only asking that we be able to use the money that we already have. We also would use that money to do work at the Minnesota State Universities and Colleges. We have been doing work at MNSCU over the years with a contract. And as I discussed with you before, we felt that it was time for us to end that arrangement and to do that work under our own resources. And so again, given the budget challenges that we have in the state, we are not here to ask you for any additional money. We in fact expect to have a budget cut as a result of this legislative session. This would simply allow us to use carry forward money. We have carry forward money because we have very significant turnover in our office, and it is accumulated, and we think that we can utilize that to do these two audits that I've just discussed. So, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions if you have any.
Questions from the committee? If not, thank you, Representative Hansen. And is there anyone in the audience who wishes to be heard on this bill? Seeing that no one wishes to be heard, I will renew the motion that House File 1332 be recommended to pass and that it be sent to the General Register. All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you, Representative Hansen and Auditor Nobles.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Next, House File 182, Representative Beard.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee, Representative Beard.
Mr. Chairman, it's good to be here. And with your permission, I do have two handouts that go with this bill that will just be a little explanatory, reinforcing, if I may.
Okay, Representative Beard, I will move House File 182 that it be recommended to pass and re-referred, I believe, to Environmental Finance. Is that correct?
To our Environment Committee, yes, please.
Okay. You may proceed.
Mr. Chairman, we're here, of course, to speak about a fiscal note, okay, which is laying in me now. This is the first time I've seen the new one this morning. And I guess I'd like to speak about what the bill does and the cost that may be incurred in complying with the legislation should it become law. It's been recognized for some time that our approach to water registration has been somewhat fractured, many paths to the same goal. In committee and members, I want to make it very clear that the goal is the same. We want the water to be as clean as possible, and this deals only with water, so I'm going to speak about water. The water to be as clean as possible as we live our lives and do productive things and in Minnesota and on the land that we've been given. That is not at issue here. What has been an issue that's come up several times over the last 20 years is that many times to accomplish the same thing requires four, five, sometimes six or seven different governmental entities to touch the same project. The outcome is the same many times. It's just the only difference is in the amount of time that's invested, the amount of labor that's invested, and the amount of money that's been spent to accomplish the same thing. That's the point I'm trying to make. So we've had over the years several reports. Back in 1995, there was a Blue Ribbon Commission that then Governor Carlson put together, suggesting ways to streamline things and so on and so forth. Much effort was expended. We still have four, five, six, seven agencies that touch water permits to accomplish the same thing. So what we've done this year is some of the folks who are actually engaged in building things and creating stuff and generating wealth and employment in our society have come forward and asked that we carry House File 182, which proposes a moratorium on new rulemaking for the next 2 years. As the bill has traveled through the process, members, the engrossment that you're looking at today has been amended to be 1 year. There is a one-year moratorium placed on new rules, so existing water rules will continue to be in place. But for 1 year, we're asking that we take a time out and that we ask the Department of Administration, and here's where the fiscal note comes in, to evaluate the programs and processes that are in place now and recommend a path of action. Members, I think that's going to be key for the next legislature to recommend a path of action on how we can do cost savings, increase productivity, and eliminate duplication among the agencies. Many of us in this place and in the what I call the real world, out where people actually work and do things, are agreed that the water could be just as clean if maybe, say, two agencies had to touch the permits. I think it could be one, but hey, let's give people the benefit of the doubt. Perhaps two agencies could review instead of many cases, four, five, six, or seven. So that is the thrust of the issue here, and we're asking members that you approve the bill, pass the bill, and send it back to the Environment Committee, where I do have one amendment that I'd like to apply at the Environment Committee, making the bill effective after enactment. That is a weakness in the bill at the moment. But members, to the fiscal note that the agency thinks that they're going to have to expend, I'd like to refer you to the handout from the Office of Legislative Auditor. And if you wish, perhaps I could have him comment to this. And I'm hesitant to do so because I've been on the Audit Commission now for, I think this is my fourth term. This year I'm the chair, and one of the things we're very reluctant to do is ask the Audit Commission to get involved in things that may be perceived in any way to be partisan. However, I don't see this as a partisan issue as much as a process issue, and I want to talk about the cost for a moment. But first, if you'll reference your note that, with his permission, I've handed to you, these are some of the OLA's reviews and reports over the last handful of years. You'll see that this has been an issue that's been going on for some time. Members, I'm trying to get some point of action in play for the next legislature. Obviously, we won't get it done this year, But next year, we're certainly hoping that we can get it done. Oh, thank you. There's an update on the finance report, or fiscal report. Oh, thank you. And so if you'll just review that, you can see that this has been talked about for some time. And I think when you look at the way the Office of Legislative Auditor reviews and evaluates programs, I think that they could probably do this for substantially less than the number that now appears on your fiscal impact statement here, the fiscal note. And particularly if we just make this an evaluation, which is what the bill is now asking for, and asking for a recommended plan of action or two or three plans of action, we don't think they have to plow that deep because so much information is already available. Once again, if you'll reference the OLA sheet, there's already work that's been bought and paid for, and I doubt that that much has changed in the last 20 years that we couldn't just recommend that. So, members, with that, I'll be happy to stand for questions.
Representative Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Beard, one of my my concerns, and I think it's covered in the bill, but I just want to make sure, it talks about no more rulemaking, but we just passed legislation about sulfates and wild rice standards. Is that an exception under your bill?
Representative Beard.
Thank you. That's a great question. Thank you, Mr. Representative Gauthier. There is, I'm looking for a talking point here that makes it very clear that the amendment that was adopted in the Environment Committee some time ago, it does clearly grant exemptions. I say exemptions you could drive a backhoe through, but I'm sure the agencies may feel otherwise, that rules that are already in process or that they've been published, the intent has been published before, let's see if it was begun before January 15th or if the published intent is before July 1st of this year, yes, they can proceed with those. They certainly can proceed with promulgating new rules. We're just asking that they don't implement new rules before July of next year. So even if they didn't meet the exemption, which I believe the sulfate rules do, they could continue to promulgate and hold the public hearings and do the process. They just can't promulgate until next July until we get the point a plan of action back from the Department of Administration. They also, if I can continue to expand on the question, where there is an exemption for emergency rules, rules that are required under court order or by federal requirement, and several other exemptions that were applied in the amendment that was offered and accepted in the Environment Committee. So we're trying to be reasonable with this, but we're just trying to ask that the basic fundamental rules dealing with stormwater, drinking water, and wastewater don't change between now and July of 2012 while we work about how we're going to get the process skinnied down to an effective and productive use of government and private resources.
Representative Gauthier.
Representative Beard, thank you for that. Not that I think that the state will move that fast for rulemaking, but there is some urgency of setting that standard. So if it should come within the moratorium, how do we proceed?
Representative Beard.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't want to overspeak how I understand the issue, but just a moment, I see. Yes, Mr. Chair, I do have people that that can testify expertly to it, but the intent of the bill is that if there's statutory requirements to be made here, that they can proceed with the rulemaking, and I'll allow Mr. Burnett speak to it, Mr. Chair, if I may.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Lisa Frenette. I'm with Frenette Legislative Advisors, and I'm representing the Builders Association of Minnesota on this bill. There is language, Representative Gauthier, under the five exceptions that says that if the legislature proposes for a rule to be to proceed, that they must do so.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Further questions for Representative Beard? Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to be heard relative to this bill? Anyone who wishes to be heard? Seeing that no one wishes to be heard, any closing comments, Representative Beard?
Well, Mr. Chairman, eternal optimist is part of me is springing forward this morning and hoping that after almost 20 years of recommendations that an evaluation and a plan of action would actually be the spur that we need to actually proceed next year on making this a little more productive and efficient. I'd appreciate your support, members, to send it back to the audience.
Thank you, Representative Beard. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 182 be recommended to pass and re-referred to Environment Finance. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No. Motion carried. motion carried, and the bill is moved to Environment Finance.
Thank you, members. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Excuse me. Okay, we have before us now House File 174. This was in our omnibus bill, and we have an amendment that's in your packet that would make it identical with what was in the omnibus bill, and we need to adopt that amendment and move it to Ways and Means. So I would move the A2 amendment. Discussion. All in favor of the A2 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. I will then renew a motion that House File 174, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to Ways and Means. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. I think that concludes our business for today. Members, we will resume our meetings next Tuesday. And so have a good weekend. Meeting adjourned.